Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the May 21st, 2007 session of the House Committee on Workforce and Economic Development. We are in session. We have a public hearing scheduled for today on Senate Bill 665A. And Ellen, would you please tell us what this bill is about?
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. Senate Bill 665A is relating to some legislation that was passed last year about allowing for the development of a major motor speedway in Morrow County. What House Bill 660, Senate Bill 665A does is expands the allowed residential development that is customarily provided in conjunction with other vacation destination resorts.
Thank you. And first up this morning is David Allen. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Witt.
And welcome.
Committee members, thank you.
Good morning.
Scoot over here, I think. My name is David Allen. I'm General Counsel with Oregon International Motor Speedway. My address is 19563 Fisher Lake Lane in Bend, Oregon. And I can be reached at 541-610-9171. Thank you for the time, Chair Witt and committee members. What I'd like to do, I know at the risk of a Monday morning PowerPoint, I'll try and make this quick. But for those of you who may not have been familiar with the bill that was here 2 years ago, 1094, I thought some background about the site, the project, where it was and where it is now. Originally, what I've put in here is DDA-1, which stands for Development and Disposition Agreement, was an agreement that the private developer negotiated with the Port of Morrow. And originally, this was the vision for the speedway. This is 1,400 acres in this yellow-zoned area, and that's all that was envisioned. When we were here 2 years ago with Senate Bill 1094, those provisions of 1094 applied only to that 1,400 acres. There was a different developer on board at the time 1094 was passed. We inherited DDA-1 and began negotiating with an eye towards some of this along the river, the airport, and other associated properties around the area. Currently, OIMS has options and is pursuing options on this footprint, which is under 5,000 acres. It's around, I think, 4,900, depending on how you count all this. So the footprint, this white line, represents the original 1,400 acres, and you can see how the site has expanded. This airport is currently operated by the Port of Morrow. It has 850 acres around it, and then there's a piece down here. You'll see a circle here. Unless those worry about agricultural land, the Port of Morrow has water rights, and they have to use those water rights to perfect them, and so they've put these circles in basically to continue perfecting the water rights. This is Interstate 84 running through here. These are railroad spurs. City of Boardman is off this way to the east 3 miles. This is the current vision, conceptual plan for what the speedway has grown to be from the original 1,400-acre site, which was, for lack of a better term, the Kansas model of speedway development. It was a NASCAR track with everything jammed inside of it and a few accessory uses around the exterior. What we found in our market research and by studying the market of NASCAR is two things pop up. Number one, jamming all of these various venues. You notice a road course, a drag strip, a 5/8 mile oval, off-road course. Packing those all into the interior of the football stadium-style racetrack doesn't work just from pure geography. There's just not enough room to put all those venues in there. Second is the overall plan of the development relates quite a bit to traffic mitigation and to the idea that if we have one race, everybody wants to come there and be there at 9 a.m. Sunday morning, and everybody wants to leave at 5 p.m. Sunday night, we're going to have a traffic nightmare. I don't care how many interchanges we build. The idea is to make this a destination site such that people will come before the race, stay after the race, and have different interesting venues for the race-going public to enjoy while they're in the area. You have a copy of this in your written materials as well, and I'll refer back to that when we talk to the amendments. Notice again, Interstate 84. This is a proposed new interchange, the Oregon International Motor Speedway interchange. This is an underpass that will go either under or over the freeway. We're still researching that for foot traffic and minimal pedestrian, more likely buses and shuttles so that people accessing this part of the development can also access the Speedway venues as well. This is the existing Tower Road exit, which will be improved under our current requirements, as will Tower Road, which is this road coming down here, will be widened again to accommodate traffic. As you can see, it's a broad vision. We have a marina around the Columbia River here, which will be part of the destination resort, which I'll talk about here in a moment. And this is a rendering of what this high bank, what we call a high bank oval, or what you might refer to as a NASCAR-style track. A little bit more detail on what that would look like. There are folks here from Morrill County that will speak. One of the unique principles of this development has been a belief that the users of the facility should pay for the facility. And in that spirit, the ballot measure was, I was thinking about driving over here this morning, almost exactly a year ago today, the voters of Morrill County on their ballot voted for an excise tax. You see the response, 78% in favor of an 8% excise tax that covers the Speedway District around the Speedway venue and the destination resort. 7.5% of that tax is to fund the development, what will be conduit financing bonds that will access to the Port of Morrow. That tax will then be dedicated to servicing those bonds. There will be no general obligation bonds. There will be no governmental entity on the hook for any of this debt. The sales tax, our pro forma show, will service that. The tax is well provided for the passage. Morrill County Court would still have to enact these of a fuel tax and a transient lodging tax as well. As far as jobs, this project would add continual 150 to 200 full-time family wage jobs. That doesn't include the 750 construction jobs that will be created during the three-year construction period. We've discussed this matter with the trades out in the area. We've begun moving forward on a project labor agreement, and the scope of that agreement is currently being worked out. Certainly, for lack of a better term, the heavy lifting, the traffic improvements, the road constructions, the facilities, even the actual development of the racetracks will most likely be union labor through a PLA. Who's supporting the project? This is a letter of general interest from GE Capital. We have strong relationships with GE. We may decide to forego the conduit financing in favor of equity financing through GE. Bean counters who crunch the numbers better than I will calculate all that out, but a lot of what we're finding is with the bond markets the way they are, we might be better off in money ahead to go through private finance. This is a letter from Governor Kulongoski 2 years ago expressing what Senate Bill 1094 did, highlighted the operative parts at least. The previous zoning and land use restrictions were diminished. When this project went through the local land use planning process in Morrill County, there were significant restrictions put on time, place, and intensity of use around the Speedway, such that any restaurant or hotel, if there wasn't a race going on, would be shut down. There'd be no signs on the freeway, and there'd be no ability to attract the passerby public. Senate Bill 1094 removed those restrictions and said, still be geared towards the Speedway, but available to the general public as well. Senate Bill 665 seeks to expand upon that. City of Boardman, I'd note that the mayor of Boardman, Ed Glenn, who authored this letter, is here today and will testify. City of Boardman has been supportive of this project. Many of the uses that will be generated from this, quite frankly, won't be accommodated at the Speedway site, particularly lodging and some of the assorted retail that won't go along with the Speedway. Grocery stores, Walmarts, things of that nature aren't part of the project and will more than likely be sited in Boardman, Oregon. So Boardman stands ready to accept the crush of development that will come likely with this size of a project. This just shows a general flavor here in Oregon for whether, do we really want NASCAR here? And as you can see, again, overwhelmingly, the folks in this survey at least, think NASCAR would be a good idea for the state of Oregon. To give you some perspective on Boardman, for those of you who aren't familiar where Boardman is, the approximate mileages around that Vancouver, B.C. in the middle at 401 miles is a target range, with a radius of 400 miles, and we'll get some facts and figures about population here in a moment. But just some general idea of where Boardman is in relation to some of the population centers around the area. These circles represent 200, 400, and 600-mile radiuses from Boardman. You can see the population densities, including Canada. At 600 miles, we get up and take into Calgary, certainly Vancouver. And what these populations show you is certainly within 600 miles of the site, almost 32 million people live, which when we were still concerned about the Bremerton project, actually, ironically, there were more people within 600 miles of Boardman than there were of Seattle, which I still find interesting. This is some analysis we had done by Buxton with regards to market penetration of that population, how many are likely to be NASCAR fans, households, and as you can see the numbers here, it's about a 23% penetration rate. So 32 million people, you can calculate the numbers of potential households in the area that would be likely fans and attendees at this facility. One of the things we're proud of out in eastern Oregon is the climate. And if you take a look, that we've been hallmarking the site for quite a while, 7.3 inches of annual rainfall. There's only one track on the NASCAR circuit now that has less, and that's Las Vegas, at about 4.5 inches a year. Why is weather important? Weather is important for two reasons. Number one, hot racetrack, fast racetrack. Number two is wet, cold racetrack means your race is on Monday afternoon on ESPN instead of Sunday afternoon on ABC or Saturday night on any of the other networks. So those numbers drop dramatically when the race is not held on the day it is scheduled. Hotel rooms is a big issue, and one of the reasons we're back here seeking to improve on some of these accessory uses. As you can see, within 25 miles, there's 1,600 rooms, keeping in mind that a NASCAR venue would seat anywhere from 80 to 100,000 people. We're behind the curve here. So we would recognize that limitation, and that's where the cities of Boardman, certainly Arlington, Hermiston, and Tri-Cities is where those additional facilities will more than likely be built. One of the big components of transient lodging on this project is RVs. Currently under 1094, we have 15,000 RV spots approved. These RV spots will be on the facility, around the facility, such that the race-going public can park and basically be pedestrians from there on out and have their home base. Water accessibility is another one. These sternwheelers, I never realized, are actually floating hotels. They have rooms that are available for overnight. The vision here is to utilize these at the marina, have them moored at the marina, and have them basically be on race weekends, additional lodging capacity. A little bit about 1094, and I won't go into great detail here, but when 1094 was passed, this was what was envisioned. This is what went through the local land use planning process. And as you can see, there were limitations on how big things could be, office space, hospitality tents, things of that nature. There were limitations on the commercial development and industrial park. All of these limitations were generally a result of DLCD having concerns about managing the growth on that 1,400 acres and what types of uses were going to be allowed. 1094 acknowledged that, and 1094 basically indicated that with some rational basis, there could be increased accessory uses around the racetrack. And that definition, associated uses and facilities, talks about the findings and removes those limitations I was talking about before with respect to hours of operation, signage on the freeway, and number and location. Senate Bill 665, why we're here this morning. Senate Bill 665, number one, seeks to expand the geographic coverage. If you remember the maps I showed at the beginning, we've gone from a 1,400-acre site to 2,600 acres.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please, Representative.
Will this information be made available to the committee?
Absolutely. I talked with staff. I'll have it digitally sent to all of your inboxes by noon today, and we'll have copies available as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'll get to the expanded geographic coverage here in a moment. It also seeks to expand the allowed associated and supporting uses. If you look at the map, there are some associated retail uses and some associated residential along the golf course, and I'll get to that in a moment. seeks to incorporate destination resort development along the river. If you can take a look at the map, the area north of the freeway, which consists primarily of the marina and the golf course, are manageable as a destination resort under the current rules. This bill in its original form and in the form it's before you currently talks about destination resort planning. There are two main reasons that this project won't work in toto as a destination resort. First of all, is a requirement under destination resort rules that there be 50% open space. If you look at the development south of the freeway, there's not much open space there. Certainly along the river, the golf course and the marina under current law count as open space, and we would meet that 50% criteria. The second reason is, in the current destination resort rules, industrial uses are prohibited. And again, if you look around the Speedway area, there are a number of industrial uses related to the Speedway that will be planned for and developed. Those two criteria won't allow the entire project to be zoned or dealt with as a destination resort. In dealing with DLCD and mostly Bob Rendy, and I would really like to express my thanks and appreciation for Bob's willingness to work with me and his availability, I think we have this bill, for the most part, hammered out. I know he's here today to testify in opposition in its current form. What you have attached to the map are the current proposed amendments of what the bill would look like. There were dash 1 amendments and dash 2 amendments. The dash 2s were passed out of the Senate committee. Dash 2 basically removed all of the supersiding authority, the direct appeal to Supreme Court, any of the bypassing LUBA or any of the court processes. That's all been removed from the bill, and this project will go through the land use process as would any other. The Dash 1 amendments remove a lot of the destination resort language that's in the original bill in favor of the destination resort planning that I've discussed applying along the river. Mr. Rendy can certainly confirm this when he gets up here. There are two remaining issues. One would be a legal definition of expanding the geographic coverage, and I think we have that resolved by referencing tax lot, tax map numbers by township, range, and section, so that the map that I showed you before, it would be limited to that footprint and not be allowed to sprawl off the site. That's been a major concern. Whatever that acreage ends up being by survey, certainly less than the 15,000 acres that's in the current version of the bill is what the bill will say. The second gets to the supporting uses and facilities. DLCD recognizes there are going to need to be supporting uses around any Speedway facility along these lines, restaurants, lodging, retail as well. Their concern is that we don't have Home Depot, Walmart, these big box stores spring up. We've talked about that. It's certainly not part of our model. It's certainly not part of what we intend on developing out there. So it's a drafting challenge of how do we exclude those while allowing some retail around the venue, keeping in mind this kind of destination siting, that there may be more than one use going on at a time. I like to use the analogy of, I'd want to go to the time trials and be in the racetrack at 8 a.m. I doubt my wife would really have much interest until 3 o'clock when the race started. So there will be venues around the facility for the folks that don't want to sit in the stands for 8 to 10 hours at a time. So through the amendment process, what we've done is tried to erect a destination resort planning for what is truly the destination resort piece of this, the golf course, the marina, the retail that won't go with the Speedway, and allow the Speedway to enjoy the expanded coverage of 1094. At this point, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. I know that's the current amendments. You haven't had a chance to weigh in on those, but I'd certainly welcome any questions from the committee.
Thank you very much. Committee members? Mr. Allen, you had mentioned that there was about, I can't remember in your presentation here, 73/4 of the folks had voted in favor, I think, of a bond. Is it a bond measure?
It's actually an excise tax, Chair Wiss.
And is that residents of Morrow County?
That's correct. The district, and if I can escape out of this quickly, I will show you the boundary of that. Apologize for the family photo.
It's a nice photo.
It's very nice photo.
I was getting a ribbing that you got to surround yourself with beauty when you're challenged as I am, so how well that comes across here. This black boundary is the excise tax boundary, the district that was erected. The underlying shading, and unfortunately, Morrow County, this is the sophistication, unfortunately, of their mapping. Currently, Department of Revenue, I think, has all of their digital maps, and they're currently implementing software to be able to generate. So we got it done, as they do in Eastern Oregon. We use colored pencils. And what the boundary represents, if you take a look at it, all this in green is farmland, EFU. All of this along the river is currently zoned general industrial along the lines of the Port of Morrow, which sits over here. You can see the urban growth boundary line here for the city of Boardman, 3 miles away. AI is airport industrial. It recognizes the current airstrip here. It also recognizes some of the history of this parcel. For those who've been in Oregon a while, might remember back in the 70s, this was going to be Cape Canaveral West. They were going to launch space shuttles and rockets out here, and they did a significant amount of rezoning. This SAI, I think it may be the only place in the state of Oregon this zone exists, Space Age Industrial, recognizing this kind of Cape Canaveral approach. And again, some more general industrial here. What the boundary represents is all the land within proximity to the Speedway and Destination Resort that have already been accepted from Goal 3 agricultural goals and would likely be developed in conjunction with the Speedway, keeping in mind we don't control any of this land down here. But we decided rather than drawing, at first we had an arbitrary 3-mile boundary. We started looking at that, saying there's no rational relation with a 3-mile bound or a 3-mile radius. So we started looking at what are we really trying to capture. And what we're trying to capture is people who use the facility or profit from the facility bear part of the cost of building the facility. Unlike the Washington model where ISC was in Washington asking for half of the cost, I think it was $250 million, be funded on the backs of the taxpayers of the state of Washington. So this is the district that was passed by the voters in Morrow County last year. It's actually on the ballot. It will take an ordinance of the Morrow County Court to enact it, and there are triggers built into the ballot measure with respect to building the Speedway facilities and race events and numbers of seats before that tax kicks in. So without the Speedway, there is no tax. Thank you for the question, Chair Whip.
Thank you. And could you also explain for us the process by which the raceway would be accepted by the Racing Commission or whatever it would be, the association?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Chair Whitten and committee members. There are a number of sanctioning bodies, what we call sanctioning bodies, and I was watching yesterday, actually, and there was Le Mans on, and there was Indianapolis Time Trials, and the night before there was NASCAR. There are a number of different racing styles. Some prefer road courses, which are the kind of winding turns, what you might think more of as Indianapolis or Le Mans style racing, and then obviously NASCAR, which preference is these big ovals with the restrictor plates and everybody jammed together and a close finish at the end. All of those sanctioning bodies have their own boards and sanctioning organizations. All of the tracks that will be developed in this venue will be built towards specifications that would allow the sanctioning body to approve the facility. The first stage is the facility is approved as a test track. And it's another market that we found is seriously lacking in the United States right now. These guys in the off-season will go try to build a better mousetrap and build a better car, but track time and spaces to go test that car are extremely limited. So the first step would be to get the track certified as a test facility, and then from there on out pursue the sanctioning bodies for actual sanctioned events. NASCAR particularly is difficult. All of their weekends are spoken for. You can ask the folks, the citizens of Kentucky, about the difficulty in getting a race. Our hope is NASCAR has expressed a strong interest in having a presence in the Northwest, and they've been interested in the Seattle area. They've tried twice with no success. We hope to be able to attract NASCAR with the financing package, which we think is very creative, the good weather, and the economic development that would go on in this area. That coupled with the easy access, one of the main problems with the Bremerton site, and if you're familiar with Bremerton at all, there's only a couple ways in and out of Bremerton. And I think the citizens there figured out that it was going to be an absolute nightmare come race weekend trying to get in and out of the island. We have easy rail, freeway, keeping in mind Interstate 82, you can't see it on this map. It's just off to the east about another 10 or 15 miles. which is a main north-south freeway for folks in the state of Washington to access this facility as well. So I'm not sure I answered your question, Chair Witt, but the sanctioning bodies, each one of them kind of pose a different challenge based more than anything on personalities.
So you build according to the standards established by the sanctioning bodies and hope that that those sanctions fall in place?
Good question. If you look on your on the map, the road course, which is on the eastern boundary of the development, the road course will be the first venue developed, and we're anxious to get moving on that road course. The road course is the first development for a couple of reasons. Number one, the facility, if you'll notice, there are rectangles around the outside of that track. Those are actually private garage pads that will be sold to a country club style, for lack of a better way of putting it. When you think of country club, you think of golf courses, and certainly from Central Oregon, where I'm at, that's what they do. This is a little different kind of country club. It would be privately owned garages for folks who are into racing and have their own private vehicles to stage their vehicles, have a garage, have mechanics on site to service their vehicles, and then have limited quarters above, a shower, a wet bar, and a TV, certainly no bedroom or overnight accommodations above the garage. The sales of those lots and the membership dues that that facility will generate will pay the approximately $30 to $40 million construction cost of the road track. That road track, the road course, will be built according to specs, as I was talking about before. With or without a premier sanctioned event at that facility, the facility still pencils as a private country club. We're confident and convinced that once it's built, that it will be an attractive facility to a number of the sanctioning bodies. So Kentucky was one of those, build it and they will come, and they're in litigation now as we speak. So I think certainly when you start looking at the High Bank Speedway, what you might think of as the NASCAR-style speedway, it's doubtful that facility will be built prior to commitments from NASCAR to hold races there. The other markets, the Le Mans Series, the CART Series, the IRL Series, all of those sanctioning bodies prefer the road course style. The design, by the way, there's two main criteria of the design to meet specs, one of which is pavement condition. You have to have a smooth racetrack. And the second of which is a design that's both safe for the driver and exciting for the race. There have to be natural passing areas, but the course needs to be laid out in such a way that if somebody goes veering off the track, they don't go shooting across the infield into another section of the track. So those are the two main criteria that any course designer will be taking into consideration when they design the tracks.
Could you give us some indication of how many race fans you would expect at an event, and how would that compare with that number compare with some of the other tracks around the country?
Certainly, it's a matter of stepping up, and again, it goes back to the sanctioning bodies. The NHRA, which is the dragsters on the drag strip, those venues, quite frankly, as big as you can build them, you'll fill them. NHRA is big in the Northwest. There are a couple of sites already that hold races. I think the stands there, our projections are anywhere from 25 to 40,000 people, depending on how big we can build the stands. The stands around the road course will likely be another 40 to 60,000 seats, keeping in mind the market for IRL, CART, the type of sanctioning bodies that would likely come. For NASCAR, the grandstands would be 80,000 for actual grandstands around the course, with a total seating capacity in excess of 100,000, recognizing the infield would be available as well for the race going public. So give you some kind of broad spectrum. And then certainly some of the lesser, there's an organization called World of Outlaws. I think you're looking in the 5 to 10,000 range. It just depends on which sanctioning body holds the race on how many fans you will likely generate. Thank you for that question, Chair Witt.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Gerard.
The question I have is, are you making use of an enterprise zone in this development or not?
Thank you, Chair Witt, Representative Gerard. Currently, the enterprise zone would only apply, under my reading of that statute, to the industrial uses around the track, and the enterprise zone likely would not extend to any of the other facilities. So we would certainly, you know, look into the enterprise zone criteria for the industrial, recognizing that's been a point of contention in this session and has also been under scrutiny in Morrill County as well. Ultimately, the county court would have to agree to extend the enterprise zone treatment to the development.
Second question. I might have missed this. What's the total value of the project?
The total value of the map that I've shown you is in excess of $500 million. Thank you for that question.
Anyone else? Yes, Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, reading through this, about your master plan, and evidently you're limiting the amount of time that the Department of Land Conservation and Development has to review the proposed changes. And it also appears, you know, just kind of glancing through the bill, that the LCDC doesn't really have a tremendous amount of authority in a lot of parts of this bill in regards to the master plan. And I have a little bit of concern, although it's spelled out in the bill, of the, you know, just the infrastructure needed to support all the people, all the traffic, you know, the sewage, the water.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of people you're putting into that little area there that I'm just concerned about the impact that has and the ability to handle, you know, the infrastructure, I guess, for this whole development. And what kind of assurances can you give, I guess, if the county of Morrow is happy with it? I suppose that's saying something. I'm concerned about the impact this has, not just to the freeway, but to the river and the, you know, the ongoing infrastructure costs that may end up being bore by the taxpayers.
All right. Thank you for that question, Representative Holby and Chair Witt. The limited DLCD review is 21 days down from 45, and the purpose for that, I'll speak from the heart, is that the relationship that we seek to develop with both the local planning and DLCD is that by the time we actually file our land use application, we will have gone through enough pre-application review that hopefully DLCD will have their concerns addressed and taken care of ahead of time. What we don't want to do is file a land use application and be fighting it out in front of the Planning Commission and the county court. So that's the first, I guess, the spirit of the development. Secondly, with respect to the master planning, certainly if you go through the master planning, the destination resort rules for along the river will be the same as for any other. We'll have to address all of the off-site impacts, if you will, related traffic, impact on the river, septic, that will all be part of not just the destination resort planning for the riverfront, but the master planning as well. The idea for the master planning is to address the very concerns that you've raised, Representative Holby, with respect to, if we're going to build this, where does it make sense to run sewer, water, and what type of sewage treatment do we need to need to utilize? This piece right here is currently owned by the City of Boardman, this pink-shaded piece. City of Boardman purchased that originally as expansion for their sewer facility at some time in the future. The land was attractive to them because it's downhill from the City of Boardman, so all of the sewage would be gravity-fed to that area. We are excited, and we've talked preliminarily with the City of Boardman about opportunities to partner, both that City of Boardman would have increased sewer capacity and we would have a state-of-the-art sewer facility for our projects. So hopefully, effluent and issues of that nature would be addressed. Thirdly, Representative Holby, the general idea of the development, keeping in both the trend of Oregon and the trend of NASCAR, quite frankly, is to engage in green construction, low-impact construction, and we have signed pledges to do so, to construct whatever facilities are capable of meeting green standard criteria to do so, the LEED standards here in Oregon. So hopefully through a combination of those three, focusing primarily on the master planning, I guess I see DLCD as a partner, not as an opponent. They certainly have been so in working through this bill, and we would recognize their authority. The limited review time is simply an acknowledgement that once, if NASCAR comes calling, We would like to be able to move this through the local land use planning process as quickly as possible. Quite frankly, that was the original intent of the supersiding. I have to admit, when I was drafting, I made sure my client understood it was highly unlikely we would get to that. In my conversations with Mr. Rendy, we haven't discussed that specifically. Certainly, an extra 24 days, if it comes back to the ordinary 45-day review, we'd have no difficulty removing that from the bill.
Yes, Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And how far is it from here, the Portland metro area, to this location?
How far or how long does it take you to drive? Those are critical questions. Thank you, Representative Lim. It's about 130 miles from Portland to Boardman. And I'd advise to slow down as you drive through Arlington because there's a resident trooper still there. If anybody that lives out there will tell you that. But it's about 130 miles.
Okay, follow-up question.
Please.
And to me, it's Interstate 84 from the Portland International Airport. Already 84 is jamming up in metro area. With this, that the traffic is going to tremendously increase. Do you have any plan how to handle all of those traffic?
Certainly. Thank you, Representative Lim, Chair Witt. The local land use planning process back when we were at the 1,400 acres talked about the number of people that would likely attend a NASCAR event. So all of our traffic studies, which have been signed off both by state agencies and by the local Morrill County Court, addressed what types of traffic improvements would be required on a race day. Those studies were generated on a model where everybody would be attempting to access the facility at 9 a.m. and everybody would be attempting to exit the facility at 5 p.m. So with respect to the congestion, certainly it's our hope that there's some increased traffic at the airport and that there are increased tourist dollars coming into the state of Oregon. With respect to the glut, if you will, on the freeway, the improved interchanges will resolve that issue around the facility. As far as the off-site impacts, if you will, of an additional traffic on the freeway, ODOT has made very clear they have standards for minimum average speeds on interstate freeways, and whatever traffic control mitigation plans that we would have to put into place to maintain that, ODOT's going to require. We're familiar with that. We understand that, and ODOT's been assured, and you'll note they're not here. They understand that this is something that is been planned and will likely generate some additional mitigation plans for just the issue that you raise.
Okay,
thank you for that question.
Please. Maybe my next question might be a fundamental question. Why do we need this? Do you think this will create more economic development and more jobs? And what is the, I'm sure you are studying this, how it's going to impact the environmental point of view. And I couldn't quite understand why do we need this NASDAQ races in that secluded area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry I'm asking that. It should be asked before, but, you know.
No, that's fine. Thank you for the question, Representative Lim, Chair Witt. The why do we need NASCAR? I think, and the folks behind me who are getting ready to testify can probably express this more eloquently than I. I lived in Heppner for 8 years as the district attorney there for 8 years, and I can tell you that that area, with the loss of timber and the limited other industrial opportunities, the Port of Morrow certainly has been successful, but that's about it for economic development. So certainly, I think for the local folks in Morrow County and in the area, it is economic development in the truest sense, a creation of jobs, creation of tax base for Morrow County, and creation of, quite frankly, being on the map and having additional opportunities present themselves. Gary Neal, who's the general manager of the Port of Morrow, is here today. He'll testify. The port's excited about the opportunity of attracting other businesses to their port industrial area as kind of spin-off or fallout, if you will, of this size of development on their back doorstep. I think the city of Boardman shares a similar view that there will likely be significant economic development in their area. Second, I guess, and I don't quite know how to put this diplomatically, so I'll just say it, the state of Oregon has an opportunity at this point to, for lack of a better way of putting it, be a player. We could have a nationally recognized, nationally televised event in the state of Oregon. It's an opportunity not just for the Boardman area, but for many of the companies here in the Oregon area to promote themselves, promote the area, and we think there will be a tremendous impact, not just to the Morrill County area, but to the state of Oregon as well.
Okay. Thank you for that question. Last final questions.
Please.
And in these days of ages, one of the concerns I have the price of gas. Right now it's at $3.50 around, could be low and higher. I know for sure it will go up more, $4, and it will be $5 soon. And the gas is somewhat scarce. And then that's my concern. You know, we in the past we depended on plenty of energies and use more gas and consume more, but in the future somehow we need to conserve energies, and by this we are going to use a lot of energies, people driving back and forth, you know, more gases, and then we import even I try to even save one drop of gas import from other countries. That will be save of our country. That's just the side, just the questions I have. How it's going to affect gas price and usage and also the of this project.
Again, Representative Lim, thank you for that question, Chair Witt. That seems to be a macroeconomic question. I may not be particularly qualified. I guess as folks in D.C., I'm hoping, are looking at that, and I hope your prediction of $5 a gallon is incorrect. What I would stress is what I discussed just a minute earlier about the green construction. Certainly part of the green construction, as we understand it, is a restriction on the construction vehicles and biodiesel, low impact with respect to pollution, things of that nature. I'd also stress that the Port of Morrill, one of their more successful recent additions to the industrial park, is an ethanol plant. And if you are following NASCAR at all, NASCAR is moving towards ethanol blends in their fuels as well. So I think everybody recognizes there are fuel needs in America now, and we're doing the best we can to address them. Thank you for that question.
Thank you very much.
Representative Dahlem.
Thank you. Three things I'd like to tease out a little, if I could, Mr. Chairman. One, permanent residence. How many people will live here year-round?
The golf course proposal has around it 300 to 350 home sites. What we've done through our research, and thank you for that question, by the way, Representative Dahlem, the statistics that we found in researching other destination resorts in Oregon is about a 25% permanent residency rate. So we're looking at anywhere from 80 to 120 permanent residents around the golf course would be the more than likely maximum of that.
So somewhere about 100 new residents.
Correct.
In Morrill County. And then, so we won't have a huge impact or drawdown on available water resources or sewage resources, except during race day.
Correct. And the water and the resources, and thank you for that question as well. The Port of Morrow has more than enough water, and you can certainly ask Gary Neal follow-up questions on those as well. They have wells on the site, which are potential, and they also have the ability to pipe water as well. So water, as far as its impact, will be through existing water rights that are currently, I don't want to say going unused, but certainly not being used in this capacity.
And we heard figures for the Olympic trials of 100,000 people. Would this be any bigger than that?
On race day,
would we attract 100,000 people?
If we have, and thank you for that question, if we have a NASCAR event at a high bank speedway, I think you will see an excess of 100,000 people in that area, yes.
And then finally, I might say I have surveyed in 244 square miles people in my district, and they both support this program.
They both.
Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I live in Hillsboro, and we have Blue Angels once a year. And, you know, some of the people love it, and they stay and watch, and all the rest of us leave town. So I don't know how far the noise carries from this, Boardman's not very far away. Is the noise such that it carries that far, and how often would we see that noise pollution going?
Thank you for that question, Vice Chair. The noise is a difficult one to quantify. We've certainly done noise studies, and we have satisfied through the local land use planning process, and again, keeping in mind DLCD and DEQ have weighed in on that portion of the plan already, and there are approvals addressing those. There are noise mitigation conditions and requirements in the local findings that will still be required to maintain. Certainly, I can't guarantee anyone in the city of Boardman that they won't hear racing, but 3 miles is quite a ways, and I think what we'll find is the dairies to the west and the odors that they carry are certainly, there's no way, as I can understand, to minimize the odors, but the noise on any given day that there's not an event, that noise will be managed on our facilities by limited durations. In other words, racing won't start before 9 or 10 a.m. and won't go past 5 or 6 p.m. such that there won't be racing, you know, under the lights at midnight, likely to disturb the residents in Boardman.
Representative Dolan.
A little more economy of scale. How many people in Boardman?
Mayor? 3,200, the mayor assures me. Thank you.
And I'm trying to paint a picture of my side of the state. And how many of them voted in favor of the racetrack?
78%.
Thank you. There's not very many people, Chuck.
Representative Colby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still struggling trying to comprehend this influx of 100,000 people to the Boardman area. I mean, notwithstanding what a great economic opportunity it might be, I'm just still, you know, thinking that, you know, freeway interchanges is trying to help mitigate the traffic. I'm wondering as whether that, you know, I'm just envisioning the snarl of traffic on Interstate 84 out in the middle of Boardman, where traffic may come to a standstill. It would seem to me that's a lot of cars to put on the road. So is part of that mitigation actually adding an extra lane to Interstate 84 between Portland and Boardman?
Thank you, Representative Holby. Current plans do not call for an extra lane to that extent. Certainly, extra lanes have been planned for Interstate 84 around the facility. Again, I think a large part of the theory of this development with respect to the other venues and the destination resort, that's probably our best mitigation plan, is to get people so that they're not all arriving and leaving at the same time. I think that's the best traffic mitigation plan that we currently have. Second is certainly accessing public transit and abilities to, you know, bring people in through public transit, perhaps on a satellite site, on, you know, certainly in the Dalles, Biggs, Rufus, and Arlington would be the natural stops along the way for increased shuttle traffic and bus traffic. What I can tell you is the folks at ODOT who've looked at this and were concerned, I can't tell you that they aren't concerned, but I believe that they're confident that their plan that we have in place will address those concerns. And that was keeping in mind that plan was signed off on 2 years ago when there wasn't a destination resort style component. We did not have the mitigation piece with respect to drawing people there before and after the facility. So, again, I'm not a traffic engineer, and I wish I could go into the details with average daily trips and things of that nature, but I can tell you the folks at ODOT who have taken a look at it are satisfied that those impacts can be mitigated. And certainly, I don't think there's any escaping. I'm not going to try and go Alice in Wonderland here and say there isn't going to be any traffic backup on race day. Our belief is that the citizens of Oregon and certainly the citizens of Morrow County are willing to put up with 1 day of traffic difficulties for the huge economic benefit that this economic engine would provide. For 1 day out of the year, for Interstate 84 to be a little slow going through there, I think is acceptable for most of the folks in the area at least. Thank you for that question.
Mr. Allen, would you hold? Would you just stand by for a moment, please?
Sure.
We have some guests that are arriving.
sort of thing.
That's quite all right.
When everyone's in the room.
Okay.
Vice Chair Lim, would you care to please introduce our guest this morning?
Okay. I just want to apologize for the interruption, but we have the delegates from Korea. Delegates from Korea visiting our state from the Gyeonggi province. Gyeonggi province is my home province in Korea. And then Gyeonggi province is the 60% of the total economy in Korea coming from Gyeonggi province. Gyeonggi province is like a state encircling the capital city of Seoul. So this is the largest of 12 million people living in that Gyeonggi province alone. And that the guests sitting out there now, they are visiting our state. 9 provincial councils, like a state representative, and then 9 staffs. So I'd like to introduce Young-bok Kim. He is the chairman of the Economic and the Planning and the Budget Committee. And also, I just want to introduce Mr. Ki-soo Kim. He's from my hometown, Yeouju, where I was born. He's representing that area. Just one more person I'd like to introduce. Only lady, female, that the provincial council is Sunmi Cho. It's a beautiful lady over there. So, and also the other, I don't want to spend so many times introducing each one of them. Just want to welcome them here, and they are going to meet the speaker pretty soon, and then they will be on our floor session for a while. And welcome. Thank you very much. Can you say a few words, Mr.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Lim. And would like, on behalf of the House Workforce and Economic Development Committee, to welcome each one of the delegates and the delegation as a whole from Gyeonggi Province. Welcome and good morning.
All right. Let's see. We have Representative Gerard next, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. First of all, I want to thank you for bringing this project forward. I'm from a rural area, and for people to invest in rural areas, I really, really appreciate it. I've heard a lot of things about mitigation of traffic, and my understanding is that the I-84 out in that area is nowhere near capacity at present time, is it not?
Thank you for that question, Representative Gerard. From about, I would say, the Dalles, I've driven that road a number of times, from the Dalles east until you get into the Hermiston-Pendleton area, it is nowhere near capacity. Certainly not what folks from the Portland area would think of as Interstate 84. I was joking earlier about the Arlington area, people get a move on through there. There's a reason there's a trooper stationed out there. Certainly nowhere near capacity.
Well, one follow-up.
Please.
For me, this is a lot easier to mitigate than, say, that the Olympics would be for Portland or the Olympic trials would be for Eugene, at least from my perspective. Is that not true?
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative. The difficulty with Interstate 84 for anyone who's lived in Portland is the Banfield area and the difficulty of getting on and off. And having lived in Portland for 4 years, and having to drive that route every night, I know exactly what happens with the Banfield. That was one of the things in talking with ODOT that we pointed out, was that the congestion levels that our study generated were less than what an ordinary rush hour Banfield traffic jam in the city of Portland is on a fairly daily basis. Thank you for that question.
Vice Chair Lim.
Thank you very much. I just want to follow up the questions Representative Gerard asked it concerning the enterprise zone implications. And what's the current status of the enterprise zone applications? Is it going to be approved or not to be approved? What's your expectations?
Thank you for that question, Representative Lim. Currently, we have no application for enterprise zone treatment in this area. Quite frankly, the enterprise zone will not become important to us until such time as the industrial development around the racetracks becomes a viable option. And so In many of my conversations with Mr. Rendy from DLCD, trying to explain the economic or the market forces that are brought to bear on this, certainly it's in the bill that we're required to build a speedway, but the reality is without a speedway venue, none of this is possible. So I think the enterprise zone application, if any, would likely be a couple of years down the road at least, at such time as the industrial uses became a viable market option around the facility.
Okay, thank you for one more follow-up, Mr.
Please.
How about the strategic investment program? Are you considering use this program of SIP program? Are you familiar with this program?
Yes, I am familiar with the SIP, and we've obviously taken a look at that as well. Quite frankly, what we're more interested in is the new market tax credits that the United States government administers, and we have in our agreements with the port to engage in a partnership to access the new market tax credits. Will likely be the additional, if any, tax relief, if you will, that we would be after.
Thank you.
Representative Dolan.
We had this, as you discussed, Senate Bill 1094 last session. What is the present status? Is earth moving? Where are we on this project right now?
There's no earth moving from the time that the 1094 was passed. And if I can, and thank you for that question. There was a change in developers, as I mentioned, shortly after Senate Bill 1094 was passed. And that's when Oregon International Motor Speedway took over, for lack of a better way of putting it, and we began to do our research and find out what was actually going to work in the area. As you can see, the drawing that we have is quite drastically different from the 1,400-acre proposal. So we have basically engaged in a year of revisioning, a year of getting a tax passed, and working on the Senate bill process to allow this project to move forward. The road course, as I mentioned, we are currently, we have financing agreements and membership agreements in place and are ready to begin at such time as we can close on the 1,400 acres and actually purchase the land from the port to begin the development of the road course. It's our sincere hope that we begin construction on that road course by this summer, no later than the end of this summer, and begin developing that road course. The road course completion would then be towards the middle or end of 2008, which would be just the course and the pads pushed out with another year of development of the pads around the facility.
Follow up, please.
So what we're doing with Senate Bill 665 is 1094 gave authority for the original project. Really, all we're doing is adding the destination resort piece with housing, the 100 to 120 residents is pretty well ready.
That's correct. Thank you, Representative Dallin. We're adding that component along the river, and we're also expanding the 1,400 acres, which is where the speedway venues had to shoehorn in before, and expanding that footprint to 2,600 acres to allow for the development as the vision plan I gave you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this is not approved, if this bill doesn't pass, what will happen to the original project? Will that continue, or is that dead?
The original project, if by the original, and thank you for that question, if you mean by the original project the NASCAR track on 1,400 acres, I believe that project would be dead. If you mean different venues that we might be able to build on the 1,400 acres without the provisions of 665, there might be ability to build one of the venues or maybe two if it's the drag strip within those 1,400 acres. The difficulty we have with that is we'll build racetracks and there'll be nowhere for people to eat, nowhere for people to stay, and nothing else for them to do. So 665 really makes this project, number one, make sense from an economic standpoint, but also make it make sense from the user's standpoint of a facility that they would likely want to go access. Thank you for that question.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, can you give us some kind of indication of industries that would likely be spun off by the raceway and destination resort? I'm presuming that there may be mechanic shops, tire shops, those kinds of things. Could you give us some kind of indication?
Thank you, Chair Witt, and thank you for that question. The likely industrial spinoffs are along the lines of what you just mentioned. Tire shops, detail shops, all different types, particular around the, keeping in mind with the road course with anywhere from 150 to 200 garages there. In that span, you'll have people who like Porsches, you'll have people who like Ferraris, you'll have people who like Corvettes. Each one of those particular makes and models has their own special, parts, special design, things of that nature. So you really do see a specialty industrial use pop up around there. One of the other developments around the Speedway that we hope to foster are some of the sponsors of NASCAR. I'll name a couple of Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, which is an outdoor outfitting type of company. We would like to see and work on relationships with those types of vendors, particular to the riverfront, the fishing, and the outdoor recreation activities that the riverfront development presents. Thank you for that
question. Until you mentioned Cabela's, I wasn't sure, but now this is a good thing.
As me sold. And do you have, has anyone done any economic analysis of what amount of money might be injected into both the local and maybe regional economies?
That's a difficult number. A lot of it depends on the type of venue and the type of race. Certainly the pro formas that we ran on the 8%, 7.5% going to the developer tax based on a NASCAR venue operating twice a year were more than enough to service the $500 million investment at about year 11 or 12. So if you do the backwards math on that, I think the difficult calculation on that, and certainly it's something we could study, going a little along the lines of Representative Lim's question, is what impacts does the Portland area experience? What impacts do the Tri-Cities, Hermiston? Quite frankly, those are going to be market-driven, I believe. I think there's going to be a market for certainly transient lodging and different types of commercial venues, Walmart, Safeways, things of that nature that the facility just doesn't anticipate developing. So it's a difficult number to put my finger on.
And a somewhat more difficult question, and given the public safety, I feel obligated to ask it. Could you tell us how far this racetrack would be located from the Umatilla nerve gas depot and the logic of placing a 80 to 100,000 person venue in relatively close proximity?
Yeah, good question. Thank you, Chair Witt. The Chemical Weapons Depot, as some of you may or may not know, is currently incinerating ordnance, and it's actually moving forward. At the rate they're going, that may cease to be a concern by the time we open a racetrack. We remain hopeful, at least, the folks in the area. The facility is about 15 miles west of the southwestern boundary of the depot, give or take. What we've found as well, my days as Morrill County Council served me well here, the plume models that get generated, more often than not, the winds are prevailing from the west, blowing to the east, such that any incident out at the depot would likely carry the ordinance, if any, and the unfortunate event of a accident out at the facility to the east and to the north is the prevailing pattern of those winds, despite what some of the gorge fog study might have you believe.
And the incineration is expected to be completed by when, do you know?
I wish Casey Beard was here, but I know that they're ahead of schedule. Okay. I'm not sure I can say under budget, but I know they're ahead of schedule.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Representative Volby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one quick question about the transient lodging. How many units will be are being proposed in this destination site area?
Currently, there is the only specific proposal we have is around the road course, which would be a resort or a hotel minimum development of 250 rooms. There are 15,000 RV spots that are currently approved in the local land use approvals. And then there are transient lodging. There's no specific number listed, 1094 removed some of those. The difficulty is it depends on what style of hotel you want to build and what the carrying capacity of that area is for transient lodging facilities. We also look at the golf course and the marina ownership patterns as well as potential transient lodging opportunities with respect to those homes being in rental pools and the condominiums being in a timeshare type of pool, that those would be travelers' accommodations as well. But to answer your question, quite frankly, without the cities around the area, Arlington, Boardman, Hermiston, Tri-Cities, developing new hotel facilities, and quite frankly, their vacancy rates will probably drop. There's no way that we could develop enough transient lodging around this facility to serve the need. It's just not possible, nor is it part of our plan. So as the project develops, and again, keeping in mind with the NASCAR-style development, there is a completely different level of need for transient lodging than if there's a road course with 20,000 people as opposed to 100,000 people. So the current design has no limitations on the transient lodging, but certainly in the destination resort side of things, there is a requirement of one transient lodging unit per 2.5 residences. So we would honor that. And as far as the speedway, I couldn't give you a firm number.
Additional questions for Mr. Allen? I'm not seeing any at the present time. Thank you very, very much for your presentation and your patience with our rather extensive line of questions.
I appreciate all the questions. Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee, and I'll be here if questions should arise.
Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Mayor of Boardman, Ed Glenn, and Gary Neal from the Port of Morrow. Gentlemen, welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I'm Ed Glenn, Mayor of the City of Boardman. I've lived in Boardman for 30 years. When we moved there, it was a city of 400. We've grown, and many of us sat around the coffee shop and said, gosh, if we could just grow to 2,500, the good life would be here. We're now 3,200 people, and some of that good life is not there yet. And let me explain. The city of Boardman was moved in its entirety in 1964 to escape the backwaters of Lake Umatilla behind the John Day Dam. At that time, it was essentially a city of gas stations and restaurants and a motel or two, and that was the scope of our commercial district. It hasn't changed much. We now find a population of 3,000 and would like to buy a pair of socks in town, and you can if you wear a pair of nines. Our community is desperate for new commercial development. And the shoes and sock store developer says we'll be happy to build a shoes and sock store when your population reaches 5,000. And the housing developer says we'll be happy to build new housing when your commercial development is better developed. We are hopeful that the spinoff from this project will provide that impetus for both commercial and residential development. Even the prospect is helping. A new motel is on the drawing board and perhaps ready to be constructed soon. Not long ago, a motel restaurant complex was built along the Columbia River next to the Port of Morrow's beautiful new offices, and that helps. But Gary has been so successful in spurring diversified industrial property. That just 2 weeks ago, we had a district track meet in town with track teams and their parents from high schools from Ontario to John Day to LeGrand in Boardman, with not a single available motel room for them because they were full of construction people. And that is often our situation. On the other hand, when the construction quiets this fall, all of those motel rooms will be empty. That's the impact, the spin-off that the city of Boardman sees from this development. When initially proposed under Senate Bill 1094, the city was petrified, because it appeared that it would be up to us to provide all of the transient accommodations for all of the fans at the racetrack facility. We're happy to see that the developer now plans at least some of those accommodations at the racetrack site, but will not cover them all. There will be motels and restaurants and shoes and sock stores in Boardman, and we are well prepared to receive that. We have a large inventory of vacant, buildable lands properly zoned for residential construction, properly zoned, supplied with utilities for commercial construction, and a community attitude that our community should grow, which in many communities or throughout Eastern Oregon or elsewhere in the state is unique among small communities. There's been mention of the noise. Understand that Boardman is in the downwind, under the downwind leg of the Boardman bombing range. And we hear A6s overhead on frequent occasion. Other kinds of environmental problems that don't seem to bother us much is, for example, a Portland General Electric cogeneration plant inside the city, said during its planning stage to whine until we'd all move away. I live probably closer to it than any other resident and hardly ever hear it. We have feedlots and dairies downwind from our city, and once in a while we catch a whiff that smells like money. The roar of NASCARs, such that we might hear them, will sound like money in the city of Boardman. Mr. Allen mentioned that the racetrack facility is 3.5 miles from the city of Boardman. It's actually 6.5 miles from the downtown Boardman interchange. And it's more than a mile to the very closest resident. The need for this facility is tremendous, not just in this area, but throughout the state. Boardman's economy, Morrow County's economy, 30 years ago, was essentially agricultural. Now manufactures more French fries than Oregonians consume, as well as processed onions, peas, carrots. We manufacture more than half of Tillamook cheese from dairies nearby. We're a great producer of electrical power for Portland General Electric customers and others as well. There's an ethanol plant under construction due for completion in July. our economy is diversifying against the whims of failure in one way or another. But we need some tourism development as well. It will provide jobs. It will improve the jobs that we now have in many respects. And it will supply traffic, generated business, north, south, east, west, for operators of motels, restaurants, gas stations, trinket shops, factory stores at Troutdale, to mention but a few. I would close with two minor requests of the committee. First, let's not insult ourselves by saying, as the Speaker of the Washington House said, that NASCAR fans are nothing more than fat-bellied, beer-drinking Southern rednecks. And in your work session on Friday, please don't mark up the bill so that it guts the very heart from its intent. If there ever was a place, a time, and a project to bypass some of Oregon's land use planning laws, this is it. Thank you very much for inviting us and giving us an opportunity to come.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. We will hold questions until Mr. Niels had an opportunity to complete his testimony.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today and make some comments. My name is Gary Neal. I'm the general manager of the Port of Marl. I've been in that position since 1989 when I moved to Oregon. One of the things that brought me to the area was the opportunity for diversity. I came to into Oregon from a dry land area in eastern Washington in Lewiston-Clarkston Valley, and that's where I was a manager of a port there. I saw all of the diversity and the opportunities that could was lacking from where I came, and I think that the port is located in a strategic position to be able to take advantage of its location and the diversity that lends itself to the region. Of course, the port has been involved in this particular project since 2000, when we started down a path of trying to go through the land use approval process to site a potential major motor speedway. It took us approximately 3 years to go through the land use approval process, including an appeal that was successful in getting through. The things that really, I think, is a key to the port and for our efforts in diversity and economic development is related to just that. Our region is primarily ag-based economy, and we're in a rural setting. We're in eastern Oregon. We're not in central Oregon in the Bend area. We're in an ag community, and that's our foundation, and diversity is key. I look at diversity traditionally as doing one more thing with that ag product and making it a processed item and shipping it out, and I think we've been fairly successful over the years in accomplishing that task, but here's an opportunity for substantial diversity, exposing our region to the rest of the world. Fortune 500 companies sponsor all of these types of racing events constantly, and what better opportunity than to have them come to their events that they sponsor, and maybe we can convince them that they ought to do a little bit more here, whether it's a UPS of the world or just about anything that you manufacture out there today. It's labeled out there on a major racing event, and it would be pretty exciting to get the chance to be able to convince those folks that when they fly in to our airport or come into the region through some other mode of transportation that we can bend their ear and show them that maybe this is a good place to do business as well. And so I think it's a great opportunity to to expose our region to some diversity. And I think, you know, with any luck, we'll be successful in accomplishing that task as well. As mentioned earlier, you know, the citizens of our county support this effort. They stepped up and showed that support by a vote of the regarding the excise tax, which I think is a great testimony to what we're trying to accomplish. We went through some very, very extensive analysis, a lot of dollars, to analyze the transportation issues associated with this type of venue. Hundreds of thousands of dollars were spent to determine whether this thing was going to gridlock the freeway system or not. Well, I hate to tell you this. Every time I drive through Portland, you're already gridlocked down there. You're past what requirements we have to meet in order to accommodate this project. By far, you're past it. And so the activities that are identified to accommodate and mitigate any transportation activities associated with this is structured underneath the 1999 Highway Transportation Plan that you passed. And we're going to comply with it, but I don't know how Portland region does it. Well, obviously they don't. But in any case, you know, we can't impact that. And we've identified ways to make sure that doesn't happen. And ODOT's there to make sure we accommodate that requirement. So we're looking for additional pieces, tools. Last time we were here, we got 1094 passed. It was because that was what was in front of us at the time to hopefully bring this project to moving ahead. And new developers came into play, did some substantial economic analysis, determined what is it going to take to make this thing successful, make it a project that works. And based on that, that's why we're here today, is because it's the tools that we're asking for in this piece of legislation is the key to move this to the next step and hopefully to a successful completion to show the NASCARs of the world that this will work and it will work successfully in an economic model that will be here for the long term. And I guess with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here and appreciate any effort that and support we can receive from you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for our panel? Yes, Representative Gerard.
First of all, I'd like to thank both of you, and especially the mayor, for kind of summarizing the attitude of small town rural Oregon. And I also would like to comment that I didn't realize that Boardman was actually moved in my district. The city of Detroit was moved when the dam was created, and my father was involved up in that area, and they always referred to it as the dam days. So I have a little bit of background knowing how that can really affect a small community. It seems to me like all your ducks are in order, and that you're not asking for money. You're just asking more or less to simplify the process for what we would call shovel-ready dirt and be able to go. Is that pretty much a summary of?
As I read some of the LCDC rules, agriculture, public facilities, and urbanization. This project simply could not happen but for some legislative exemption. The site itself, as both Gary and I have mentioned, is surrounded by agricultural land use. Understand, in eastern Oregon, with 6 inches of rainfall, but always comes on Tuesday, incidentally. with 6 inches of annual rainfall, not even dryland wheat grows in North Morrow County. It requires irrigation, but it also requires soil. This site has neither. And the agricultural people have gone around it because the soil is only that deep. And it's what we call blow sand. And it supports cheap grass about that tall that provides 2 or 3 weeks of grazing for cattle measured not by cows per acre, but acres per cow. As to land use, it's virtually useless for agricultural purposes. Evidence the fact that the farmers have made a big circle around it and simply have not used it when they've utilized land all the way around. This is not only the highest and best use, it might be the only use for the site.
Additional questions, Representative Dolan?
Yes, for Gary, I want to reiterate that the siting has been accomplished. In fact, from the last session, I recall that we talked about if Intel were to move to the state, we didn't have a site big enough. And this is one of the few places in the state that we could put together enough property to site anything of this size. Right. But again, this bill is adjunct to 1094, and simply augments that piece of legislation so that some housing might be added. It would be like having a half loaf when we could have a whole loaf. I might say to my fellow, I thought Eastern Oregon would always bend when you came to say that. For those of us that live somewhere else in Eastern Oregon besides Bend, I think the project demonstrates the tenacity and moxie of Eastern Oregon. They're not here asking for money. We're here asking for regulation that will allow investment, allow growth, allow opportunity, and allow a future for our side of the state. And I'll be asking for your support when the time comes.
It's going to cost you.
Additional comments? Mayor Glenn, I just hope as you develop additional motels that they continue the tradition of some of the long-standing motels in Boardman, that they also come equipped with bird dressing facilities for the folks who go over there and enjoy that pastime as well.
And I'm happy you've correctly identified one of the major recreational activities in Boardman.
And I'm sure that compatibility will continue as well.
Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Next, I'd like to call up Bob Rindy from DLCD and Amy Joyce from ODOT, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Rindy, and I'm with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And as you've already heard, our department has been involved working with this project, I think, since about 2001 when it first cropped up. At that time, the applicants were using a procedure we call an exception, which allows a local government to take exception to any statewide land use goal for a reason. And under that process that did take a number of years, we reached agreement on a speedway. Last session, we again were engaged with this discussion because the limitations on that exception site that the county had approved were such that the facility at that time, they felt probably rightly so, that to bring NASCAR out there, they needed opportunity for additional uses. That was confined to the footprint that the county had already approved, and our department, I guess other departments probably engaged in those discussions as well, and many others, but we were one of the groups that was involved. And we agreed to I think it was House Bill 1095 last session. The primary I guess the understanding that we had all along with this is what you've heard already, that if we can land this speedway, this is as a location that the county has already demonstrated has low agricultural values, there's some other concerns out there that and many of those are concerns that the applicants would deal with other agencies, not with us. And at that time, I think many of those were satisfied for that footprint. And the bill last session was to simply expand the scale of the uses, provided the speedway was built. The major motor speedway was the primary mover. It would be there, and then and only then would all the accessory uses. I'm here today to talk a little bit about, and I think we can only fairly talk about the A and Gross version of the bill of 665. As you heard, David Allen did send us some proposals on Friday. I was out of the office on Friday. Our field staff was also on the road, the person that's been working with us out in Eastern Oregon. So I can't really honestly today speak to the proposed amendments, and I don't think that the intent was that we'd be able to. We're going to be working as quickly as we can to try to evaluate those and to continue meeting with Mr. Allen and others as necessary, but I can't speak to those yet. We don't have an analysis of those. So let me really briefly explain what right now our concerns are, just in general, that we expressed to Mr. Allen about the bill as it exists. And that is, first of all, while there is a map, and you saw the map, and the map looks real exciting, if this bill passes, that map or dozens and dozens and dozens of different maps could be approved. The bill as it's now written, I think it's 15,000 acres somewhere, either including this site or some other site, could be the location of that. That's so broad that we don't feel confidently that we know where really this is going to be. You could fit that map within that and still have many, many, many more properties involved. So we've tried to urge the applicants to have a bill that for which you can approve and know legitimately exactly where is this really going to be. If the wording is so broad that it could be almost anywhere in Morrow County, then I don't think that would be the understanding. And I don't think that was the intent. I just think that's the way the wording came out. Secondly, the uses that are associated with the facility. Again, you're the legislature, and you could authorize any uses if that's what you wish to do. It's been our understanding, and I think it's the understanding of other agencies as well, that in order to evaluate this, we'd have some sense of what those uses are. And I think hearing this morning concerns from the city of Morrow that it'd be nice if a lot of other uses are built. In the city of Boardman, that those uses would go there as well. But right now, I think as worded, for someone who does land use, I think it's very hard to pin down what these uses would be. Unlike last session's bill, where we felt very confident that what you legislature approved was something that was a speedway and related uses, I think in the wording that's currently in 665, I'd be really hard pressed to say what uses could not go into this site. And again, the applicants have agreed to try to pin that down, and that's what we're working with them on. I do think there is a broad opportunity in current law to build a destination resort at or adjacent or in the vicinity of this area without any legislation. And we've urged the applicants to look into that. I think what that does is it takes some of the pressure off this bill, because under the destination resort law, there's quite a bit of leeway, a great deal of leeway for residential. Right now, I don't know how many residential units would be built under 665. I think the site plan might show some amount, but keep in mind the wording of this bill as it's worded now, you could have vastly more units than that. So whether they will avail themselves of that opportunity and try to build part of this under the destination resort law as we've suggested or put it in this. Again, we're trying to get to some certainty with this bill. I think, with all due respect, that the testimony that we've heard is that there will be a speedway, a major motor speedway, and then this is associated with that. And I think there's many ways to write a bill so that it says that more plainly than this does, and that's what we're looking for in the amendments. Finally, on the limited timelines, I think the understanding with timelines that are in statute for land use notice to DLCD, you may not be aware of this, but we're a clearinghouse. And when that notice comes into DLCD for a land use application, a change to a local comprehensive plan, that then is dispersed to many others, either those, certainly state agencies, and there are many state agencies involved in this, and others who have signed up simply for the service of knowing that these applications are there. In this case, I know that Department of Transportation, who'll talk to you in a minute, but also DEQ, state lands, water resources, and aviation would all be agencies that would have many concerns. And I think many of those agencies signed off 2 years ago on a footprint, a much smaller footprint and a much smaller kind of pattern of land uses. And so I do think they're going to need much more time than this bill would provide. I don't see the need to shorten the notice period, and one would argue, since what this bill does is waive a lot of state requirements that normally would probably alleviate concerns of those agencies, if anything, certainly the amount of time we have today, a 45-day notice or even a broader notice, would be appropriate. So, and I think the residents of the area deserve a greater opportunity for notice, for time to look at what's being proposed and for involvement. So I don't see the necessity of the tight timelines, and we'll continue to discuss that as we go forward. I'm going to stop there because, again, I think what I'm forced to do today, and I don't think is necessarily very helpful, is talking about a bill that we know is going to change. It's going to change very fast, and we're all hard-pressed right now with lots of legislation that's moving, but we're going to be trying our best to try to get comments back and get some give and take today, tomorrow, and the next day with Mr. Allen, and see if we can come in with something that's closer to something we can support.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rindy. Ms. Joyce, good morning.
Thank you, Chair Whip, members of the committee. Amy Joyce, Department of Transportation. Hadn't originally signed up to testify, but some representations were being made about the department, so I just wanted to come up here and just put a couple things on the record. With the new plan versus the plan under last session's bill, I think the department hasn't completed an analysis of whether the traffic could be expected to be mitigated. Mr. Allen said that, you know, the department was comfortable that it could be mitigated. He said something to that effect, but I don't know that we're there yet. So I wanted to let you folks know that. And then also to get on the record that under the current law, and this is not changed at all by the bill, the developer is financially responsible for any changes in infrastructure that are necessitated by the development. So that wouldn't be the responsibility of the highway fund and the taxpayers. It would be the responsibility of the developer. So.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Gerard.
This is actually a little bit of a comment. Maybe Mr. Rindy wants to comment on it. And that is that, and I speak only for myself, but and I think that we have a failed land use policy throughout the state. And the problem that I see, and this is only my personal opinion, is that what's good in Boardman isn't necessarily what's good in Portland. And the one-size-fits-all philosophy of LCDC, which you are required to by law to fulfill, doesn't seem to meet this circumstance. So you got 78% of the population of Boardman is for the project. You have the mayor here speaking for it. And, I think that it seems like we could streamline this project. I'm trying to understand the concerns that you have. The sewer that they talked about
heck, the city of Boardman is going to end up, it sounds like, with a better sewer system than they have now. And so what are your concerns that you're trying to address? I mean, what's the ultimate concern that you have?
Mr. Chair, Representative Girard, I perhaps I wasn't real clear in my comments, I'll try to say it again. First of all, the basic presumption of this bill is something that we have agreed to now twice, and are working towards on this version. The concerns that I expressed are that the language of this bill, as currently drafted, allows a lot of different things other than what you're hearing today, and not that they would build something different, but I think to the extent that what the legislature is doing is essentially you're sitting as a planning commission. This is unprecedented. It's not that you can't do that, but we were suggesting that we would try and help the applicants present to you a bill that you could be confident that with what you're being asked to approve here is what would be built. And I honestly don't think that the language being so broad and that wide open is necessarily the applicant's fault. It may just be the way the drafting came out. I don't know what it is, but that's our first concern. Secondly, as part of your question about one size fits all, and I think, you know, I don't think it's appropriate today to spend a lot of time trying to argue that notion. We've spent many hours, and there's a big look task force of course on land use looking at this. On our website we've got pages and pages of documentation to show you all the different kinds of policies that vary throughout the state. In this case, the recognition, first of all, the exception is one size doesn't fit all. That's why an exception was proved. That's why the exception process exists. And I think with this bill, it's in a recognition that one size doesn't fit all and that we need something special to allow this use. So I think we can deal with that issue.
Vice Chair Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand you correctly, your only objection, or at least your main objection, is that what we are seeing proposed may or may not be what this bill allows, and if this bill was very specific to this proposal, you would not have a problem. Is that correct?
Representative Witt, Representative Riley, I can't yet speak for what we're going to finally see, but what I put forth is our concern. Right now, what this bill allows is much more than what's been proposed, and we think it can be narrowed to something that's proposed. At that point, when it is more specific, we know exactly what the bill allows. I think at that point it's up to you, the legislature, whether you want to waive land use laws. We feel our role at that point is to point out to you what the bill would allow, what the impacts would be, and make sure the other agencies are concerns are taken care of.
Thank you. Representative Dolan.
Yeah, I have, I guess, Bob, I'm going to ask you first, and Mr. Chair, if you permit me, I have a question for both agencies. What I heard you say, Bob, was that 1094 gave the triangle footprint, and that all these other uses could be accomplished with local decisions. Is that correct? Did I hear that correctly? Regardless, I'm not sure what's in the bill either. Neither one of us are, but those could be done with local decisions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dowell, they could be under the exceptions process, but to the extent that what the and certainly the destination resort uses could be. There are some uses on this list that the only process is to take an exception to state land use goals, and there are many uses that look like a destination resort that's already allowed by state law. But that's all a local decision. In other words, if the applicants were to separate from this, most of the residential uses along the river, the golf course, and a lot of those other things, and propose to the county a destination resort, most of those uses are allowed today under state destination resort law, but not all of those uses. Some uses do indeed exceed that.
Let's track that course for a moment. How long does it take to do the exceptions? If one of the things in the plan were to be in it, how long does that process take?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dallum, that varies widely from locality to locality. If we didn't have a state land use program and the proponents were in another state were proposing a use of this magnitude and this scale and the impacts on state facilities such as state airport, which is going to be moved, or not state, but port airport, a transportation facilities, anything else, I think the planning process would take a couple years. It generally would.
But how?
There's no limit on the exception. The state law could allow the county to approve exception with 45-day notice.
So what I see is, and I asked several times, is this was a housing unit. So what I see are developers and our people in Boardman, 3,500 of them, wanting is an expedited process, but with local review is really what they're asking for, isn't it?
I believe so.
And that doesn't fit our present land use scheme. I'm starting to get an Eastern Oregon nervous feeling here. I'll tell you why, because I am relinquishing what is a local project to a Salem agency, which makes us on the other side of the hill nervous all the time. But I understand that these could be done. With this legislation, we will give these people the authority to expedite their process. But your concern is it's too broad, and there are things that this bill may allow them to do that the state hasn't exercised oversight on yet. Do I understand that?
Representative Dallum, that's not what I said.
Then I don't understand. And I do need to understand. What I'm saying is, let me see if I can clarify a little, if you'll be patient with me, Mr. Chair. The bill, 665, offers up to this project housing and then some things we don't know about in the amendment. And what that would do is, on an expedited basis, push things through LCDC. And it would give prerogative to the local people that they may not be able to exercise right now. Do I understand it correctly?
Again, Mr. Chair, Representative Dallum, I'm not sure I can give you a satisfactory answer. This bill doesn't require LCDC approval. The bill authorizes right now 15,000 acres of development that, as I indicated, could very well be the site map that you probably have in your packet.
It could be something else. Yeah.
Could be, well, it certainly is far larger and could be far more uses. I am pointing out to you that that's the case. And so to the extent that our input is, that there's interest in our input and the applicants have expressed interest in trying to get our support, we've been working with them to try to come up with language that would clarify that the map they are showing us would be what's in the bill. And we're also pointing out to them that some of that they could do under a current process. Nothing in this bill requires them to go to LCDC and get LCDC approval if this bill passes. It's authorized locally. The only thing that we were talking about in terms of the increased timeline, which is a minor amount of time, is the shortening of the 45-day notice period that we use for all agencies down to 21 days. I don't think you gain very much by shorting that. I don't think that's the expedited process that's being envisioned here. The expedited process is, once this bill passes, there is little or no state review except the review by certain agencies such as ODOT that's built into the bill and other laws like that.
And so the review would shift to the locals. Mm-hmm. Really, they would decide whether a land use application was appropriate or not within their own planning process then?
Currently, that's the case. Okay. So it's not shifting anything. It's expanding what's already offered.
Giving them more authority, broadening the base of their authority. Thank you very much for your patience with me.
Just a reminder that we have a 10 a.m. floor session, so we're going to have to wrap this up fairly quickly. I will... carry this hearing over to make time available for those who came today and have not had an opportunity to testify. And just very quickly, Amy, I'm still not convinced that we're going to be able to adequately address the frog in the snake's belly here when all the traffic hits the interstate. We have a potential for a casino in the gorge. We have the Ice Age Museum with its 30,000 people a day that are visiting that.
You got my attention.
And we have what appears to be the potential for 80 to 100,000 people to be departing a racing event. And even given that some of them may be attracted and held over for a few days, I still see that bulge going down the snake's belly, going down the interstate, and I remain unconvinced that a four-lane highway can accommodate that amount of traffic. Can you comment?
Well, Chairwood, I'm unfortunately blessed with that dangerous just little bit of knowledge at this situation, and so what I can offer to you is when you carry this over at your next session, I will bring as much information as I can about the situation. That's unfortunately, with my level of knowledge, what I can offer today.
I certainly appreciate that very much. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to dismiss this panel. Thank you very much for making yourselves available. And real quickly, before we all leave, I would like to give Representative Smith a 30-second opportunity here to tell us good things.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith, and I appreciate you giving me 30 seconds here. Very quickly, I just want to voice my support for this bill that is before us today. Sometimes special projects warrant special circumstances, and I think that's the case here. We have an opportunity to step up and really, really provide an economic stimulus for Morrow County, which, if you look, really is an economically depressed area part of the state. It's an opportunity to create good family wage jobs and to create great construction wage jobs for a period of years. Lastly, I just want to address the transportation issue, Chair Witt, because I live in Morrow County for a reason. I like being in rural Oregon. The one thing I'd point out is as you're looking at the 100,000 traffic count coming, Morrow County, where this racetrack is located, is centrally located to where I-84 East, I-84 West, and I-82 coming down, and then 395 coming up. And so they're hoping not to just draw the population from Portland, but rather just about 25,000 of it, another quarter coming from one direction, another quarter from another, and another coming up. So, Chair Witt, really appreciate the opportunity to say I support this bill, and I appreciate you giving this a hearing, and we sure hope you'll give it strong consideration and work hearing.
Thank you very, very much. We certainly would be interested in you returning if you so desire, and I would characterize it as a very high level of interest on the part of this committee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 665. It's almost bad, but it's going to get better with the amendment. 666? No, anyways.
I thought that through.
All right, Ellen, if you please tell us what we're going to be doing on Wednesday.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. On Wednesday, May 23rd at 8 a.m. in Hearing Room C, you all will be carrying over your public hearing from today on Senate Bill 665 dealing with a major public speedway, and then you will be hearing your first public hearing on Senate Bill 1045, which directs employers that participate in the Enterprise Zone program to report employment growth.
Thank you very much, and with that, we're adjourned until Wednesday. My apologies again to the audience.